I'm going to be talking about impermanence, and this is a largely personal talk, which I want to dedicate to my dear friend Farah Kanti, who died about 11 or 12 days ago. And she exemplified aging with grace and contentment and dignity, actually, and her death also exemplified very similar qualities. She died very peacefully in her sleep, which is very characteristic of her shortly after discontinuing her treatment for a bone marrow disease. So she really exemplified something about both the aging process, how to embrace the aging process, and also how to embrace. Kukai, have you not seen, the peach and plum blossoms in the royal garden? They must be in full bloom, pink and fragrant, now opening in the April showers, now falling in the spring gales. Flying high and low, all over the garden, the petals scatter. Some sprigs may be plucked by the strolling spring maidens, and the flying petals picked by the flittering spring orioles. So, reflections on impermanence, or letting go into the dance of life. So reflecting on impermanence has been, it's probably been the bedrock of my practice, actually. Because virtually the whole context of my Dharma life has been within a family context and working in the NHS. So my meditation practice, which has been important and an important strand, but I would describe it as being irregularly irregular. It's kind of gone through phases because of the demands of life. But reflection, as Shantavadri said the other night, is something anybody can do anywhere at any time. So, reflecting on the Dharma, reflecting on impermanence, has been something that I've been doing for quite a long time. It's been a very consistent and important practice for me. And family life, of course, is a great teaching in impermanence. Things just keep happening. And those of you who are mothers will know that you, especially with younger children, you just feel you've got everything sorted and you've got a really nice routine, and then it all goes pear-shaped again, and you've got to kind of recalibrate everything. For example, if the car wouldn't start and I was due to take my son to his piano lesson or something, I would then use that as at some point reflect on that as an example of impermanence. Or if I ended up seeing one of my friends in the Sangha at A&E because my son was being checked out for a broken wrist, that's just another lesson that life is impermanent and I'm not in control and life is king. I think very early on in my life as a parent, I came across C. Day Lewis's very poignant poem called Walking Away, which is about him reflecting back on his son's first football match. And I haven't got time to read you the whole thing, but the last two lines, which in a way gave me a sort of blueprint for being a mother, are how selfhood begins with a walking away and love is proved in the letting go. How selfhood begins with a walking away and love is proved in the letting go. So, being a mother has been a one whole long journey, process of of letting go, of meeting impermanence. And actually that still goes on. My eldest son is 34 and the youngest is 26. Anyway, I'll come back to that. And yeah, do look up that poem called It's Walking Away by C.J. Lewis. So I've come to appreciate over the years ever more deeply the Buddha's vision of really seeing into the path of life and seeing that change is at the centre of everything. All conditioned things are impermanent. Everything is in a state of flux, of flow, arising in dependence on conditions and ceasing when those conditions cease. And as far as I know, someone might correct me, but the Buddha's vision of Pratityasamutpada as being central is unique in the history of humankind, which I just find completely sort of remarkable. And there are various exhortations, aren't there, for us to pay attention to impermanence. So we have Kukai with his urgent imperative, have you not seen, or have you not seen? The last words of the Buddha to his disciples, according to the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, were Vaya Dharma Sankara Apamardena Sampadeta, which means impermanent are all conditioned things, with mindfulness strive on. In the life and liberation of Padmasambhava, we find Padmasambhava about to leave Tibet because his work's completed in terms of setting up the conditions for the Dharma to flourish. And he meets Queen Nanchung for the last time. So this is Queen Nanchung's last meeting with Padmasambhava. It's a crucial, crucial meeting for her. And she asks him for something of great import, a teaching of great import, an effective verse that she can memorise and will lead her to the truth. So what does Padmasambhava say? Listen, Queen Nanchung, pay urgent attention to impermanence. Turn your mind to going for refuge and direct your prayers to the Lamas. These are the preliminaries without which no means exist. So what we have here is these great beings, you know, particularly the Buddha and Padmasambhava. Such crucial times, the Buddha was dying, Padmasambhava was leaving for the last time, and they're urging their disciples to pay urgent attention to impermanence. So this has felt like a message that I can't ignore. So, you know, Punyamala, pay urgent attention to experience. At the same time, our own teacher, Sangharachita, has really encouraged us to also think about the Vimokshamukhas, so the gateways to liberation, which we've heard about last night, and Vajratara's mentioned them today as well. So it's not only about seeing into the nature of conditioned existence, but it's also developing a sense of what's beyond that. So it's not just that we're seeing that everything's impermanent, unsatisfactory and insubstantial. It's actually that there is something else there that we're moving towards. And I think, and Bhante really said it was really important to do both. And I think it is really important to do both. So, I've also held in my mind over the years the image of the directionless Vimokshamukha, which has been particularly sort of meaningful, which is that perfectly poised, perfectly round sphere on a perfectly flat plane. So it's a complete state of poise and equanimity. So you're just poised there, and you can go in any direction. I sometimes think of a cat, actually, in association with that image. You know, when they're just really poised and they're just ready to kind of move. It's that sort of thing. And that's what the enlightened mind is like. It's just in this perfect state of poise. And I have also been drawn, so sort of more later on in my spiritual life, to the mystery of Shunyata. A few years ago, I was on a reflection retreat at Tara Loka, and I was contemplating impermanence. I was outside, I was enjoying the flow of conditions, the changing light, the clouds went across the sun, and you know, the light on the leaves changed, and the breeze came and went, and the leaves and the branches were moving. It was all very beautiful, and I was really appreciating this lovely sort of interplay of movement and light and so on. And suddenly I realised there was this huge, great thing, very static, dense, solid, at the centre of it, which was me. And that I was somehow outside of this process, this flow, this flux of conditions. That somehow I was just this sort of great, solid, fixed thing, which somehow wasn't subject to change, but was just outside of that whole process. So I realised that whilst I could reflect on impermanence in the natural world and in the life around me, and you know what was happening in the life around me, I somehow wasn't applying that to, in the same way, to myself. And in fact, I didn't even quite know how to do that. You know, so I felt so kind of stuck, or so sort of fixed, or so permanent, or something. I didn't even know how to sort of, you know, do that. Anyway, that the next step in this strand of reflection and impermanence seemed to be to work on this. And various events then conspired to help me and support me with these reflections. So the one was that one was my aging and unreliable body. So a few years ago, I developed osteoarthritis in my hips, which caused me to limp, which I find extremely difficult to my view of myself on a number of sort of different levels. Also, as time went on, my mobility was increasingly affected, so actually life became really quite difficult. And it was a very profound teaching for me in impermanence, that I'm not in control, that life is king. It was very humiliating at times. I really had to let go of a sense of independence, being able to cope, manage, but it's also been very, very fruitful in terms of my spiritual growth. And I'm now very fortunate that I've got one bionic hip, and life is immeasurably better than it was. Things aren't perfect. But, you know, I've got a much more realistic relationship with my body, and the fact that this body is impermanent and not to be relied upon. So it's been a very, it's not what I would have chosen. These things never are they? And it has been, from a spiritual point of view, extremely fruitful and helpful. The other thing that happened around sensitive time was that my eldest son decided to move to Canada, which wasn't surprising because he'd married a French Canadian. But initially I found that extremely difficult, and I was really sad and upset. I also was very surprised to unearth some unconscious fantasies that I didn't even really know I had about possible futures. I mean, he didn't have children at the time, and I didn't even know if they were going to have children, but these stories came up about, well, that means I won't be able to visit my grandchildren. Not that there were any, but, you know, it was just like, he was doing something which would make my ideas about a sort of possible future. Impossible. Well, not meant easy or not happening in the way that I thought they would. So that was all very interesting, and and it was very helpful indeed reflecting on that in terms of an example of impermanence. Those reflections freed me up to let go of any blame or resentment or resistance to what he was, you know, his plans and what he was doing, so that I could continue to love him wholeheartedly and, you know, support him with what he is choosing to do and so on. And I remembered Milarepa's line from his beautiful Song of Transience in Eight Similes. A precious son is born, soon he is lost and gone. This shows the illusory nature of all beings. This proves the transient nature of all things. Think, then you will practice Dharma. So this example, I think, was really interesting because it was an example of where the Dharma helped me to deal with a difficult situation. And it also, you know, my understanding of the Dharma deepened as a result. It was one of those twofold things. It was both that it helped me deal with it, and I also gained a lot from it in terms of feeling more able to let go, and also seeing, you know, what happens if you don't, you know, if I'd hung on to my resistance, then I would have been into sort of blame or criticism, there would have been a sort of block in my communication with my son. So that was a very that was another very sort of useful strand of reflection and so on. I think these two examples, both of my aging body and Ben going to Canada, were both really strong teachings that conditioned existence is impermanent and life is king and I can't control it. That's what those were kind of helping me sort of chip away at. But the other strand that I wanted to share with you arises from my experience of death and being on the 3-month ordination retreat at Akashavana. So about 5 years ago, I've lost track of time. My brother-in-law, who was a year younger than I, died very tragically of pancreatic cancer. And in the same week, Vajragita died. And also around that time, another order member who I didn't know, but she was my age, and she died very suddenly and tragically of sepsis. So it was a very particular time, and Phil's death and my brother-in-law was a huge tragedy for my sister. And Vajragita, who I hadn't sort of seen that much of in the years before she died, I was looking forward to seeing more of her because I was just becoming a public preceptor, so I was looking forward to seeing her in that context. And she'd also been very much part of my moving into that responsibility. So I think with more from my sister, but we were both facing a different and unlooked for and unwelcome future. Mm-hmm. It was like suddenly this future were no longer sort of existed. So it was a very quite strong time, and various questions arose for me about how do I live with the fact of death? How do I stay open to the fullness of life and live with the fact of death without being overwhelmed or falling into horrified anxiety or depression or despondency? how do I avoid beating myself up if I forget all about impermanence? And the answer that I arrived at was that I want to live my life as meaningfully as possible. That's what seemed to me to make the difference. And it was interesting that there was a national order weekend, which was kind of significant in terms of bringing that meaning very much to the fore. So in the words of the Four Reminders, abandoning actions done solely for this life, I shall strive day and night on this path and so make this life meaningful. So I find that I live more easily with death if my values are, if the three jewels are central and vividly in focus and honoured in my life. The demands of samsara are endless. Mm. And it's so easy to fill our time with activity, washing up, ironing, someone to see, the latest film, the latest, that email you've got to do, or those minutes you've got to type, I don't know, whatever it is. It is just very, very easy for us to fill our time with things. Mm-hmm. And Gampopa says, doesn't he, that busyness is laziness. So it's just really, really important to prioritise what is truly and genuinely nourishing. And, to really give time to... making sure that my life is aligned sufficiently with the truth and the way things are. And one of the consequences of this also has been the reflections on death, well, the experience of death and then reflecting on it, is just to live more fully in each moment. I mean, it's a truism, and we say that a lot, don't we? But that, in a way, that's crucial, is living in the moment with an open, loving heart. There is only now. There is only now. Anything else is a memory or a fantasy. So we have to be living our lives now, because that's the life we've got, is right now. So death is a great teacher, has been a great teacher, to inhabit my days as fully and completely as possible in each moment. And there's been there's been some very significant deaths also in this last year. And again, they've underlined that the need, practice of just living, you know, making the most of each moment, and also making sure that there's no unfinished business. More and more and more I see we can't leave it till the last minute, because the last minute is too late. That's how it is. So we just need to be doing whatever we need to do in relation particularly to other people now. One of my Father Cantor's death was quite sudden. And when I heard she was ill, I hadn't seen her for a while. We've corresponded, and I thought to myself, I thought she was here for some months, or anyway, whatever. I thought, oh, maybe she lives in Brighton. Lived in Brighton. I thought, oh, maybe I could get down to see her. So, you know, if there are things like that that we think we want to do, we need to do them now. Mm-hmm. This is all sort of truisms, isn't it? But the whole thing with impermanence, isn't it, is that we know it intellectually. It's obvious, but it's getting our emotions engaged with it and really living from that kind of basis. So the final thing I just wanted to say was that alongside of this experience of the death of family and friends, is that I've been doing the meditation on the six elements quite intensively over the last 4 years, mainly at Akashavana, which is very, very good conditions in which to do that practice. And for me, this practice is a contemplation of the flow of the elements and letting go of my identification with a fixed and unchanging self. So it's about letting go into a much more expansive and flowing awareness. So as a result of that practice, coupled with these experiences of friends and family dying, I feel that I'm much looser and freer and have a much greater sense that change is at the heart of life and that I too am part of that change. And what I aspire to do is to let go, in order to dance ever more fully and deeply with life, whatever it may contain in the moment, with an open, aware, loving and tender heart and mind. So I'll just finish with two verses of Kathleen Raine's poem, The Moment. Never, never again this moment. Never these slow ripples across smooth water. Never again these clouds, white and grey in sky, sharp crystalline blue, as the terns cry, shrill in light air, salt from the ocean, sweet from flowers. The sun that rose from the sea this morning will never return. For the broadcast light that brightens the leaves and glances on water will travel tonight on its long journey out of the universe. Never this sun, this world, and never again this watcher. Thank you.